Hello, everybody. Welcome to the recording session. Have a seat. Have a cup of tea. Have a glass of water. We're about to start. Hope you enjoy the collaboration. Hope you become familiar with the sounds and the intenseness of expression. Just sit back and relax. This is about getting up in the morning and feeling good with a new day and a new chance to create. Okay? So may the deserts have water. May the storms calm down. May the snows lighten up. May the babies laugh. And may your ears remain open. So, in poetry, in music, in knowledge, in peace, security, and longevity, come on and step into the time flow with us. Come on, let's go. Let's go.
Yes, and welcome aboard another edition of Saturday Morning Live. My name is Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali, and today we're going to have an exciting show. We're going to begin the show with Ayinde Blake, Saturday Morning Live's film critic. We're going to have a monologue. We're going to have a regular show today, and we wanted to begin with Ayinde Blake having some technical problem, so we won't have Mumia Abu Jamal, and we're going to begin with Ayinde Blake. Ayinde, are you there?
I am there, Norman. Hello.
Good. How have you been enjoying the Hot Docs Film Festival, or have you been attending anything?
I have been around a little bit to see a few films. I was making a little recommendation for Mighty Jerome.
Okay.
Documentary. By Charles Officer.
Yes, sir.
And it chronicles the life of one of the most underrated sprinters in history. Before there was Donovan Bailey, there was Harry Jerome, and he was for a time considered to be the fastest man in the world. The film depicts the struggle in which he had to deal with race in the public eye and many other facets of his life. Now, the documentary has one final showing at the Review on May 8th, which would be tomorrow.
Tomorrow
at 4 p.m.
Is it 4 p.m. or 4:30?
4:30, actually, 4:30 p.m.
Right.
As part of the Hot Docs Film Festival, so it's highly recommended. It looks like a good one.
Yeah, I've seen that one myself, and Harry Jerome, I guess people would know that Harry Jerome is the person that the Harry Jerome Awards are named after. He's from the west coast of Canada, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so. It's getting very good reviews as well, especially from other peers as well. It's a step from Charles Officer's recent works to do a documentary. It's quite something. He also puts in reenactments of certain parts of his life in the film.
Mm-hmm.
So, we have two other films here that I have prepped to review. So, I'll start with one of them. We have Something New. It was a romantic comedy by Sana Hamri. I reviewed one of her other films. It was Just Right. This was the one before it. It stars Simon Baker, Golden Brooks, Sanaa Lathan, Donald Faison, Blair Underwood, and Alfie Woodard.
Mm-hmm.
The film deals with interracial relationships in America. It introduces us to an African-American woman, a high-powered office executive by the name of Kenya, who is unwilling to let her hair down at any cost. Under duress from her sister friends, she goes out on a blind date, only to discover that the man she meets is completely opposite to her. Outgoing, adventurous, and white. The story practically writes itself from there. Something New throws in the right mix of comedy and sultry romance. The chemistry between the leads, Sanaa Lathan and Simon Baker, is absolutely fiery. This is definitely a film for the ladies as well as the men. Something New is now out on DVD, and on a scale of 1 to 10, the film gets a 9. Now, moving on to another film that I had anticipated, that I had mentioned in January as to one of the films to look out for, was Night Catches Us. It was the film of this year to look out for. Although it had a limited U.S. release late last year, it has finally surfaced. Initially, this film showed promise, with two young and exemplary black actors, Anthony Mackie and Kerry Washington, headlining the project.
Anthony Mackie out of New Orleans, right?
And a musical scoring by the legendary hip-hop group The Roots. It seemed that nothing could stop this film from greatness. Directed by Tanya Hamilton, the film deals with a man returning back to his old neighborhood in Philadelphia for the first time in several years. Set against the backdrop of the Black Panther movement in the late 1970s. To begin with, the chemistry between the two leads are solid, and Anthony Mackie really embodies the era in his performance. Although the film clocks at 90 minutes, it feels like 3 hours. The direction tries too hard in making things overly artistic. There are far too many plot holes and end rather haphazardly, leaving the viewer unsatisfied. Unlike other period films, this one claims to be set in 1976, yet the film does not do enough to prove that. The musical score does not consistently reflect the time shown. It is unfortunate that the film suffers due to the fragile plot and unintentionally pretentious direction, even though the actors shine within it. Unfortunately, once again, Night Catches Us is a complete letdown, and for it, the film receives a 5.
The film, does it deal with the Panthers as a revolutionary group that fought against oppression and lost, or does anybody survive? Does everybody, like a Spike Lee film, that everybody ends up dead, or what is a?
I'm not going to spoil the characters' demises, if any. Just to keep it...
Understand, no problem.
But when it comes to the actual historical context of it, there's nothing much. It's the Black Panther movement per se. There's no real actual delving into it. Mm-hmm. As far as I go, it's just historical archives of video images. But that's as far as it goes. There's not much else that delves into.
Is there like a Huey P. Newton, Bobby Seale, Eldridge Cleaver characters, or is that left out?
No, those are left out. It's just it just seems to be just it's pretty much based on the two leads.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you would like to add?
No. That's that pretty much covers it for the month. Just to bring it back up, Mighty Jerome had the review at 4:30 tomorrow. So if you have the time to see it, please do.
All right, thank you.
Will do, thank you.
Take care.
Will do.
And you have been listening to Allende Blake, the son of Milton Blake, and CKLN continues with Saturday Morning Live. We wanted to open up the phones and see who's listening. We wanted to see what you think about CKLN online. The number here is 416-595-1655, 416-595-1655. Who is listening and where are you listening from? From the internet, we know that we have listeners in Australia, we have listeners in Kenya, and we have listeners in France. And we wanted to know who's listening in Toronto, who's listening in Ontario, who's listening in Canada, who's listening in North America. And we want to hear from you, 416-595-1655, 416-595-1655. And while you go to your phones, we are going to listen to some music from Eric Dolphy featuring the voice of Abby Lincoln, or a.k.a. Aminata Museka. And you are listening to CKLN, and we are at CKLN.FM, CKLN.FM. The number here is 416-595-1655, 416-595-1655. We would like to hear from you. What do you think about CKLN.FM, 416-595-1655? We're going to be having a panel discussion a little bit later on, and we want to hear from the listeners and who's listening. We know we have a Facebook, and according to Facebook, we have listeners listening from Toronto, listening from other parts of Canada, listening from Australia, listening from Kenya, and listening from France. And we would like to hear from people and how we are sounding. We would like to know how we are sounding online and what you think about CKLN going forward. 416-595-1655. This is Saturday Morning Live. My name is Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali, and Jean Hodgkinson, JP, is in the studio on the buttons, and we want to hear from you. 416-595-1655, 416-595-1655. And many, many things are taking place in the world today, and if no one is going to call, I guess we can take another music break and come right back at you.
This is Noelle Hanrahan. Norman Otis Richmond and friends have been doing diasporic music for 25 years. Norman and friends are still black and still strong. Keep listening to Norman and friends on CKLN FM 88.1.
This is George Dr. Funkenstein Prince, and you're listening to Brother Norman Otis Richmond here on 88.1 CKLN, always making moves. They do the dog, y'all.
This is Lydia Masamola. I am a radio producer, community activist, and Pan-Africanist based in Vancouver. Norman Otis Richmond and Friends have been producing diasporic music for 25 years. Norman and Friends are still black and still strong. Keep listening to Norman and Friends on CKLN 88.1 FM.
Still black, still strong. 25 years of diasporic music. Celebrate 25 years with Norman Richmond on the radio.
This is Rita Cox congratulating Norman on 25 years of music. Norman and Friends are still black and still strong. Keep listening to Norman and Friends on CKLM FM 88.1.
You're listening to CKLN. This is Saturday Morning Live, and my name is Norman Richmond, and joining me in the studio is Melinda Francis, and we're going to begin a discussion. I said it right. For once in my life. So how's the week been?
The week was really great. It was 10 days. Well, it's not quite done yet. It's done tomorrow. But I was in and out of the industry session, so I did a lot of panels. And, yeah, it went really well. The major thing that I learned is there's no money in documentary.
unless you're Michael Moore, or does he make money?
Yeah, I think Michael Moore's doing okay. But
before we go into this, I want to ask you that in terms of documentaries, it seems like we're dealing with the whole world, and most of the whole world, with the exception of North America. Not saying that people in North America are slower than other people around the world, but people are being dumbed down in this society. But yeah, it looks like, you know, France, Japan, and all that. But I guess in terms of, if you're going to get your stuff translated, that's more money for the filmmaker.
Right.
So, but explain what you mean by there's no money in documentaries.
As I go, as I wanted to do this week was have a game plan of how I'm going to finance the Haiti project. So at the industry session, there's all the broadcasters and stuff like that, and all the broadcasters are cutting the amount of original films that they're making. Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean, where broadcasters are just not financing the production of documentaries anymore.
So that means you have to private money, or you have to get money from individuals or corporations. And I know a person like you, a lot of filmmakers don't want to deal with corporations because corporations want to tell you what to film and what to say in your films, right?
Yes. It's a really difficult, road right now, because I'm trying to figure out how, because you don't want anybody telling you what to say and what to do. But at the same time, the first doc that I saw at the festival was the advertising game, and the fact is that's how he made his film. He got it all from corporations. So I don't know. It's a difficult. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to have to sit and figure out, because there's a lot of new innovative ways that they're trying to put money into, like, for example, new media and website stuff. So I think that's what I'm going to sort of
look at.
Yeah.
All right. So you're listening to Saturday Morning Live, and we have a caller. Or you can have to introduce this segment.
So during the festival, I was talking with a lot of other filmmakers. So I wanted to introduce Gaddy. She just was in Sierra Leone, and she was making a film. So I wanted her to come in and talk about it. Is she on the air?
Hello.
Hey.
Hi.
Hi, how's it going? How's your hot dogs going?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Maybe you could just explain your film a bit.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm just in the process of raising financing to do a film on a single-leg amputee for football team in Sierra Leone, West Africa. I went back a month ago to Sierra Leone. I'm originally from Sierra Leone, and it was my first time back since I was a child, small child. I won't date myself. So it was a very, you know, it was an incredible experience for me, but it was an opportunity for me to finally meet the team and do some filming. And I was able to do so through raising funding, Kickstarter.com, crowdsourcing way of raising funds. I raised $20,000 on Kickstarter, and I also got some the Toronto Arts Council that enabled me to go over. So with that, I'll make about a 15-minute documentary. But with the hopes, because I'm a little bit more optimistic than Melinda with the financial crisis of the documentary world, and I'm hoping to raise funding to do a feature-length version of the film. And this week at Hot Docs, I found it encouraging. I mean, I understand that broadcasters have no money, but because my film, you know, has Canadian content and possibly not has Canadian content, I wouldn't even be difficult to get a Canadian broadcaster.
That's true.
So I've kind of ignored Canadian broadcasters, or not ignored them, but thought, okay, well, chances of that happening are slim, so let's go elsewhere. And understanding that, you know, I've had broadcasters tell me, well, nobody buys Africa.
Right.
I've had people tell me that. I've had people tell me, well, we don't care about that part of the world. You know, different comments like that, but I think it's an incredible story, and people are very receptive to it. So there are definitely other sources of funding. You know, documentary films are not there to make money. I think you're kind of just trying to make money to get your expenses covered. And there are places out there that have foundations. To me, that's my new target, are foundations that like to give money to social issue documentaries, to underserved regions in the world. So, Melinda, that's your next target.
Yeah, well, I also... sorry about that. I also raise money over Indiegogo, so I'm on that tip. And I mean, that's another thing like that we have to deal with, like with doing topics that are really not covered, and it's also like the type of films that are being made or being able to be sold or whatever.
Yeah.
So this is what is overwhelming, because I think these stories have to be told. What was your impression of the films that you've seen?
See, I'm just catching up now. I haven't seen very many films. I've been really focused on the industry side, networking, going to the panels. So I haven't seen enough films, but I've seen two now, and now today's my marathon day, and tomorrow I've seen films. I mean, I've seen Mama Africa, I saw Blood in the Mobile. I like both films, but again, go on the trend, which I, you know, disappointed to see just Europeans telling African stories, which, you know, is not bad, it happens, but I just feel like there needs to be a balance of the actual African voice, or the voice of the person who's from that place. You know, it's, and with this new fund, Hot Docs announced this week of $1 million towards helping African filmmakers tell African stories. I think it's good. I just hope it's not a media op and a photo op, and, you know, two filmmakers will be in Hot Docs next year parading around with their film for a photo op and then end there. So I'm just hoping that be able to see more and more, you know, people from being able to tell their own stories. So kind of well, the thing I see every year at Hot Docs, you know, on the panels, they're just a sea of Europeans, or, you know, it's not diverse enough.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah.
I want to ask you a question in terms of film festivals. No, two questions. One, what are your thoughts on? They say Africa doesn't sell. How do they account for Bollywood? One, and do you have any plans of taking your film to like the Pan African Film Festival in Ouagadougou, the Pan African Film Festival in Los Angeles and Atlanta, and you know there's Mexico. Mm-hmm. There's Pan African Film Festivals all over the world. But those are two questions I had for you.
Yes, well, I think Nollywood is...
Nollywood, I'm sorry. Nollywood, yes, not, yeah.
Yeah, I figured that's what you're referring to. But Nollywood is a place, I think, that's growing. I think a lot of Nollywood are low quality. They're not things that I think film festival goers look at as that's film festival films. Those are kind of soap opera, docu, melodramatic, low quality, bad acting is kind of where Nollywood came from. But I think where it's progressing and going is where you're seeing actual talented filmmakers making quality films. And I think those films are starting to be respected in the film world. But I think the majority of Nollywood, no, is not respected in that same kind of level of these are films or, you know, are pieces of quality cinema. No, I mean, the thing is the nature of Hollywood came out of not being able to have television and the people wanted soap operas.
Could I just say that Nollywood, Nollywood is Nigeria's Bollywood's Indian, Nollywood is Nigeria, and a lot of people listening didn't even know what we were talking about. Sorry for cutting you.
So I think it's something that's coming of age now, and I think there are quality filmmakers emerging out of Nigeria and the West African region because of Nollywood's boom. I will see more and more films from that area, but I think it's normally been sporadic to see actual African filmmakers from that region making these quality films that the film festival world respects. And the second part to your question?
I think I was asking about various film festivals like Ouagadougou and L.A.
Oh, definitely. I mean, when my film was made, I really want to get it to a Pan-African audience to see it. So that will be a target. I mean, a lot of those festivals don't have markets per se to do the whole industry side of things. And also they do come with hefty plane tickets. Perk of being in living in Toronto is that you're here, you know, you just can leave your house, hop on the subway and get to all these broadcasters.
Right.
I wanted to get back to the speaking of like the diversity within, because I've been going to Hot Docs for about 5 years now, in and out of the festival for 10 years actually. So, and it's interesting to me that it's probably like the diversity of topics are really, really, really wide, and it's all over the world and global and stuff. But again, like going back to the point where, yeah, it's still very, very, very white. So, and I get very overwhelmed actually when I'm there. So, And you know, for example, Blood in the Mobile, I was there too, and it's a good film to get the topic out there. But yeah, it is very you know, the European going in and kind of I like to call it, you know, the white man burden film. So
yeah.
But, I mean, it's still important and people should see it because it is a topic that's really not really talked about. But, yeah, it's always my frustration. Like, you want to see these stories, but you still want to see, people telling their own stories. And that's mm-hmm. my frustration as a filmmaker and a filmmaker of color. So, yeah.
You're listening to Saturday Morning Live. This is... Melinda Francis, Norman Otis Richmond, and you can listen to us at ckln.fm.
I don't know what's going on with the mic. So is there anything else you wanted to add, Gaddy? Maybe about the direction, like what's for the future the road coming up for your film? Is there anything...
I'm just going to hopefully get this 15-minute version done, get that into the festival circuit, and raise money for a feature length.
Yay. And, yeah, so I'm excited. I'm excited for you. And, good luck with your film.
thank you. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Did you have anything to ask further, Norman?
No, just all the best, and I hope you get your films in film festivals, including the Toronto International Film Festival, as well as all of the Pan-African. I mean, I'm not necessarily there's nothing wrong with crossing over if you can cross over on your own terms, you know. I think
exactly.
you don't make films just to watch yourself. So best of luck, you know, in the African and the general context.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, thanks for being on the show, and good luck with your film.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks. And you are listening to Saturday Morning Live, and we're going to take a slight musical break and come right back with another guest. And you are listening to CKLN. We're listening to the music of Judy Mowat. And you want to go, Melinda?
Hi. So our next guest is Tiffany, and I wanted to have her on the show talking about her experience at Hot Docs. She's another person that I ran into. So Tiffany, do you want to basically talk about your experience at Hot Docs?
Sure. Thanks for having me. So we were actually pretty surprised that we got selected as part of Hot Docs 2011 TDF Forum, which was a tremendous honor and amazing for our project. It's essentially the forum is, I'm not sure, Linda, did you explain the forum?
Yeah, maybe I'll do that right now. So the industry side of Hot Docs, they have the Toronto Documentary Forum, where it's a range of teams that pitch story ideas for upcoming financing. So that's basically what the TDF, as it is called. So, so you participated in the pitching session. So, how was that?
It was pretty intense. people often ask me, like, oh, my God, how was it, like, sitting there and being in a room full of, like, 500 people? And you can never really prepare, like, perfectly for it, because once you're up there, I just saw Chris's head. He was sweating, which got me nervous, too.
Yeah, and so to set the stage for people, it's a room full of commissioning editors, broadcasters, funders who sit there, and then the team has to pitch their ideas in front of this whole. And it's not just them; it's also observers. So there's like 500 people.
Yeah, it's an international market.
Yeah. So maybe. What's your project that you were pitching?
So we've been working on this film called Within Every Woman for over 2 years now. Essentially, it's a story that explores the complex process in healing and the role society plays in perpetuating the shame that silences victims of sexual violence. And it follows the story of three grandmothers who are survivors of military sexual slavery from World War II in Asia, shot across China, Philippines, and Korea. And they all experienced, they were all collectively part of this, this system, and each one of them have dealt in a different way in terms of their process and healing. And it's really important to tell this aspect of the story because it's so often that we kind of abandon the aftermath. You know, the physical act of sexual violence has a beginning and an end, but people don't realize the aftermath lasts for a lifetime. And it's kind of like the car crash syndrome, where when you see a car crash, you're immediately attracted to it. You see it, it grabs your attention, and then afterwards you kind of drive off, and that's it, right? But that's kind of where we want to focus on is not to sensationalize the act of violence and the crime and that aspect of it, but because that's already been spoken about, that's already talked about, but really to also shine light on how these grandmothers at the age of 80 are surviving after 50 years of being silent and not speaking out. Why didn't they speak out? What took them so long? How does the society play a role in all of that? And they've all taken a whole different path. One, a grandmother in the Philippines at the age of 81 is still trying to come out for the first time, if you could imagine. And another grandmother, Grandma Chung in China, who's been completely abandoned by her family after speaking out. And how does one even find salvation when the only people you love have turned their backs on you? And then there's Grandma Gil, like a martyr of the cause, essentially a professional survivor who lives and breathes this every single day for the past 6 years. She's dedicated her life to this cause and has flown across the world speaking at various different conferences, and we follow her and kind of see how far will one go to obtain justice and at what cause. So that's essentially the premise of the story.
So how did your pitch, you feel like, was it received well?
You know what, the pitch was so nerve-wracking, and I think overall it was well-received. There was definitely some intensive questions by the commissioning editors and the broadcasters around the searcher weaving my own personal story with this film, and it was difficult for me to answer on the spot, and I knew it was going to come up, but overall it was well-received, and we had amazing meetings afterwards, and the audience loved it, which was also very important because essentially it is for them and for them to also learn and share the story with other people. So overall it was great. It was a tremendous opportunity for us to even get this film, you know, shown to that many people, to even let them know that this project is happening. And, you know, it's a really urgent time for us to get this film made. Most of the grandmothers are at the age close to 90 right now.
Time is running out and we need to get this film made.
Cool. So what was your, besides the forum, what was your overall, like, feeling with the festival and Hot Docs in general?
Well, overall, I think it's really interesting this year because I was part of Hot Docs last year and was checking out the whole festival, and I think the festival right now has really turned, like, in terms of filmmakers trying to get their movies made, and with the internet and just the way things are working, there's so many ways of innovatively funding your own film, and I think that was one thing that gave us a lot of attention was how we even got to this stage. I mean, we're a very young production company, and we didn't have a broadcaster on board prior to this, which most people do, and I think it's something to be said that, you know, these days you could actually find various ways to be supported to get your film made instead of waiting around to see see whether or not you get a grant or you get the broadcaster on board. I encourage people to just go and do it. I mean, when you have the internet, there's anywhere. We've actually found, we're actually part of Kickstarter.com, which is, I'm not sure if you heard about it. It's an online campaign, a crowdfunding campaign. So you post up your film, your ideas, and you do certain pledges, and people could actually help you raise enough money to make your film. So our project, actually, we not only have a Kickstarter campaign going on right now, but we're also sponsored and funded by a project, but also an organization called Toronto Alpha, who believed in this project from the get-go and supported us, as well as Aeroplan, who's sponsored us with miles to allow us to fly across Asia. So we found very innovative ways to getting this film made, and continue. We still continue finding ways to get this film made without the traditional ways of broadcasters and stuff like that. So it's been really interesting to share that with other people and have hearing other people's ideas of how they've been getting their films made as well.
What are your impressions of the films this year? Have you seen any films, or you were probably too busy, right?
Sorry?
How have you seen any films, and what's your impressions of the films that came out this year?
I didn't catch many films during the festival, but I did manage to catch Inside Laura Rocks, as well as The Bully Project.
Yeah.
Both incredible films, completely different, but it was... Inside Laura Rocks was just mind-blowing, that the relationship between the director and the character, Laura Rocks, who, you know, for 5 years just essentially seemed kind of like the aftermath of contracting HIV after being in the porn industry for only 2 months. And, you know, again, I think it's an incredible film, again, because it shows you that side of it that most people ignore. And again, people were like, the film starts off with just like how the media sensationalized, just like, oh my God, she contracted HIV. They gave her 15 minutes of fame on the news. And then that was it. The story ended. And then the director, Mia, she basically followed and became really great friends with Laura Rocks and kind of followed her to see like the aftermath of how everything unfolds. And I thought it was phenomenal. I thought the process is crazy. And if we could only be so lucky for all directors to have that connection and that bond with their characters, I think it really shows, and it's very powerful. And The Bully Project, well, everyone was crying in the theater. I was sitting actually between two of my friends, and I couldn't cry because I was so distracted by my friend on my left crying and my friend on the right crying, and everyone around me. It was crazy. It's a very moving piece, and it's something definitely that needs to be addressed around how kids are getting bullied in school and how the system doesn't really protect them when the moment they leave their homes, which is just crazy. Have you seen it?
No, I want to see it, though. I want to see The Interrupters today, I think. I wish I could see all of them.
I know. There's so many films out there. I mean, in that way, like, the festivals are pretty incredible in the sense that there's just so many films and from different places. I was kind of disappointed. There's not that many films from China. This year I wanted to take my grandmother to watch a film this Sunday for Mother's Day.
That takes me to I asked Gaddy earlier, but just like the what overwhelms me is that the wide range of topics and things, but when you go into the industry side, it's still relatively, you know, white.
Yeah.
And that's always, every year, I'm just like, why isn't there more of us? So,
you're absolutely right, yeah.
And so that's my hope is, supporting, you know, it's important for, like, you know, filmmakers of color to support each other and support our films, because we're basically, we're building our audience and making space for all of our stories, because that's still not just like the topics, but the actual point of view, you know. So
no, you're absolutely right. It's something that, you know, you definitely feel it when you're in the industry side of the festival, and definitely sticking out and stuff like that. And I think it is slowly changing. And I think to get to, like, when you're part of the forum and part of pitching and part of the networking, is to not get discouraged, and to, like, essentially you either wait to build your audience, or wait to get funded, or wait to get a broadcaster on board, or you can just try and just do it and try to find your audience before filming, you know. Like, Kickstarter is amazing, and you can actually really just get more engaged with your audience with the process of how you make your film. And then there's this one film I wanted to talk quickly about, got into TDF, was Finding Vivian Meyer, and they didn't have any backings whatsoever, but they had a Kickstarter campaign. They raised $100,000, and that enabled them to be part of TDF, because it showed that, you know, they have an audience out there that really wants to get this film made, and they should be part of the forum. So I think anyone can, you know, anyone with a story that they feel really important, and they have already a following with audiences that also want to see a story like this get told, can also be part of this forum, be part of the industry, and can slowly change it and make it more diverse. Absolutely. One step at a time, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Well, we had our, like, you know, block. We all found each other all the time.
I actually wanted to mention that Within Every Woman is part of Hot Doc's curated page on www.kickstarter.com/hotdocs. And you could actually find our trailers and a lot of our vignettes and essentially see our process and support it if you want it, if you want to help us get this film made as well.
Thank you so much, Tiffany, for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Awesome.
And good luck. And yeah, we'll be following it for sure.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
All right, bye.
Thank you. And you are listening to CKLN. We are on the internet, and I would like to make an announcement that at 12 p.m., from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m., there will be the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement will be leading a march for black justice, and this is dealing with the decades of police brutality that has been inflicted upon the African community and other communities by the Toronto police. And this march will take place 2 days after the first anniversary of the vicious beating of Junior Minon by the police services. And it will be taking place today at 12 p.m. from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. at Founders and Steels at York University. And Saturday Morning Live continues.
Mm-hmm.